Ron House. Dr. Ron House, the president, John A. Logan College, our guest this morning. Ron, it's always good to talk to you again. How have you been?
I've been well, Tom. Thank you very much.
Saw the press release. New president named Kirk Overstreet.
Yes. Yes. We had a good supply of candidates, highly qualified. It was an interesting decision that the board had to make. And Dr. Overstreet was selected, and I think it was a good choice. And everyone's looking forward to him being on campus.
So what will you tell the new president about the job, what he needs to know about your experience that's intrinsic to John A. Logan College?
Well, Dr. Overstreet is from up north, and I'm going to tell him about the people of Southern Illinois. I've been here a long time. And how we operate and how we think, and about Southern hospitality. I'm going to tell him what a great staff that he's inheriting, a good board, and we have good programs, good people, and good support from the local community. And that will work to his advantage just like it has worked to my advantage. And so that's the number one thing. And then reaching out to the segments of Southern Illinois, the business segments, the healthcare segments, the radio segments, all of that I think is extremely important, and we have no reason to believe that he won't do a wonderful job at all of that.
So in your experience, what's the best part about being president of John A. Logan College?
Being president, I think, is a lot like being a radio announcer. Our major role is to serve. And whatever we can do as a college and whatever we can do as individuals and whatever we can do as a faculty and staff and as an athletic program or whatever to serve the needs and interests of the people of Southern Illinois, that's the most enjoyable thing that anybody can have and the most rewarding thing that anybody can have. And I've been truly blessed with that in the 5 years. We've dealt with a lot of strange, hard issues in the last 5 years at Logan, but we've also accomplished a heck of a lot, and so I'm most pleased about that.
Worst thing about the job?
The worst thing about the job is dealing with those things that are just the opposite of what I just mentioned.
Yes.
Fires, pandemics, layoffs, things of that nature that in the realm of serving that takes a strange turn. And serving doesn't always mean rewarding. It doesn't always mean something really, really good. But you serve the same public in a pandemic as you do when things are going really well.
It's interesting because, and I got this from Walter Windler years ago when he was Chancellor of SIU. His fascination with the job was presenting young people with an opportunity and then seeing what they did with it, giving them the tools that they need, the opportunity to be an engineer or a lab technician or IT, didn't matter what it is, right? Give them the opportunity and see what they do with it. And I kind of see that as really, when you look at the long-term thing, and I think I see a lot in sports, a basketball player that comes back to his coach 30 or 40 years later and saying, I wouldn't be where I am today without the encouragement, the opportunity, the teachings that I learned out on the court. It happens on a greater scale in colleges, and I don't think we have a great appreciation for it. The word opportunity.
Right. That is so inherent in our system that that's part of our mission. And so that, I didn't even mention that. That's sort of like the Bill of Rights and the Constitution.
Right.
It's inherent that that's what we do. That's our job, is to provide that opportunity. But the service end of it is very rewarding as well. But certainly, that's just part of the community college mission in the state of Illinois, is to provide as a wide-ranging opportunity for our students as we can. And seeing where they go with that, Dr. Windler made a good statement there. But that's just part of our mission. Every college in the state has that mission. It's no different, and we try to live up to that like every college does, and we work hard at doing that.
It's interesting. Walter and I were in the car riding over to Harrisburg to meet prospective students at the high school. He was going over there to try to, you know, enhance enrollment, meet with some of the parents, things like that. And he says, I forgot which school he's at, but he goes into the restroom, and scratched on the urinal wall is – I paid $100,000 to go to this damn school, and all they did was change my mind.
Well, not knowing what that person's mindset was that got changed, I'm not sure whether that's good or bad.
Yeah.
But I hope that his mind was changed for the better, or
right.
her mind, and his mind, I guess, if you were in the restroom. And so that we do that every once in a while. I've changed my mind about some things, Tom, and I suspect maybe you have too.
I have.
Over just living your life.
Right.
And so that's what education is about, as well as changing your mind about yourself and changing your mind about other things in our society as well. And so I don't view that as particularly bad.
Nope.
I regret that you had to pay $100,000 to do that, but nevertheless, it's, lessons are costly.
This morning that Dr. House's first thought is, we can do that for half that price.
That's true. We don't have anybody that pays $100,000 at our place, regardless of how long they stay.
Right.
And so, yes, we could do it a little bit more cheaply than that.
I've been fascinated by this report I read from Deutsche Bank, I think now it might have been 2 weeks ago. And the basic heading was that COVID-19 has accelerated every existing trend. And I wonder about the, you know, online learning, hybrid learning, the opportunities that are created there more safely, maybe lower cost or whatever the case. There's a lot of things that go under that umbrella. But do you think that what we're seeing right now will have a long-term effect on education, particularly higher education?
I do, Tom. And I say that for this reason. We haven't just changed one thing. We've offered online courses for years. Not the vast majority of our courses, but we've been in the online business for years. We have universities across the state that do across the country that do nothing but offer totally online courses. You can get PhDs off of the internet. But more than that, we have systemically changed the way we operate our institution. We are now in the mode of almost every meeting we do, even meetings on campus or on Zoom or conference calls or things of that nature, the things that we've never really explored very much, and now we're using them on a daily basis. And so, I think the system of higher education has changed dramatically as a result of this pandemic, which is not over, by the way, and in our particular area, far from it. And so by the time this all ends, whenever that is, we'll have a different kind of operating mode, not just in the delivery of instructional services, but how we function as an institution.
We've seen many people before the pandemic in surveys saying, questioning whether college was financially worth it. And I wonder if the financially worth it aspect will meet the I'm on hybrid and I don't use a building and I can't rationalize that cost even more so. That's one of the things that concerns me, cost, and then how people now envision, well, why should I pay you that much? I never leave my house.
Well, that's interesting. But whether you leave your house or come on campus, the amount of work that's done to present that course to you is probably the same. As a matter of fact, it's a little more if you offer an online course compared to a face-to-face course. There's technical implications and staff for technical difficulties and all of that kind of thing. And so it you have to pay the instructor. You have those costs. You have all of those fixed costs that don't change whether you're sitting in a classroom at John A. Logan or sitting in your living room at home. Those fixed costs are about the same.
It's interesting, because in that Deutsch report that I was talking about just a couple of moments ago, they said the same thing. And they said, and that's why we should tax people who work from home. Because, well, the infrastructure's still there. Somebody had to borrow money to build that office building, and now nobody's in it, and you're at home, but it still needs to get paid for. You're not using the road, but we still have them, and so you should be taxed for never leaving your home. And I thought that was interesting. You know, I bet if you...
I don't know that I agree with that,
yeah?
but nevertheless.
Yeah. You know, I bet if you went back collectively and listened to every interview that you and I have done, I'll bet you 9 out of 10 times we talked about the nursing program in some form or manner, right? With the SIUs coming on board,
yeah,
how popular it is. And now look at this. a nursing program, right, in a pandemic where literally every day for the last 4 weeks you've heard about the stress that nursing staff is under, how important they are, they're heroes. And, you know, you've been working on this program and growing it, and it's been very popular. I see it at the when I come to the college, especially during the work events they have when it comes to hiring. So, you know, the importance of this, the success of this program, I mean, if there was anybody that doubted the practical ability to be able to have a job in this field, well, that question's been answered.
It has, and it's a vivid example of the opportunity that we talked about earlier, just in this same interview. We provide that opportunity, and some of the opportunities that we provide and some of the people that we produce, they have to have a time when they perform. And so it sometimes takes an emergency or an unusual situation to occur, and all of a sudden these people rise up and they become the heroes and they become the people that save the day. And certainly the healthcare field is one of those, but there are many others too. Cybersecurity, we have scientists working on, you know, the people who have developed these vaccines, learn how to do that in a college or university. And so we're contributing a vital, vital service to society with all of the people that have the opportunity and take advantage of that and go on to be the researchers or the people who provide the service or the doctors or the lawyers or the engineers, all of whom started somewhere. Maybe not where I did in a one-room country school, but they all started somewhere, and it's a cumulative thing. It's not like you go for a year and this is what you get. It's you go for a lifetime, and you never stop learning, and that's why we have learning for people of all ages. And so, yeah, it's nursing is really coming to the forefront right now, but there are a lot of other healthcare people behind the scenes that are doing a lot of things as well, and so we're happy to be able to provide all of those opportunities for our people.
Yeah, phlebotomists and lab technicians and on the list goes.
Yes.
But, you know, it's so interesting because, and I forgot, maybe it was Senator Durbin. I know he and others over the past 10, 15 years have come to John A. Logan College and said, there's a shortage of nurses. We need to fix it. This is one of the ways we're doing it. And now here we are in the very situation, although probably never quite dreamed of. I'm curious.
Right.
We have to acknowledge this first, this before we get to the next question. We have to acknowledge a fact. In the environment that you work on, you can't get anything done without help, without people around you. With that portion acknowledged, what do you think is your greatest accomplishment during your tenure at John A. Logan College as president, Ron?
Oh my gosh, I don't know, Tom. I've not given that one moment's thought. I don't know. I think maybe that's a cumulative thing too. I don't know that anybody can be, you know, point to one example of. Maybe if you were a general all your life and you won the war, maybe you could point to that. But the cumulative effect of anybody is the service that they provide over a long period of time, generally, not a short period of time. And so I've been there 5 years. We've done a lot of good things. We've tried to cope with the bad things. And so I don't know. It's a whole combination of all of that. I've never given that any thought. Don't know that I will after today. But anyway.
Well, I thought it was interesting when you're saying that, you know, being there consistently every day is its own accomplishment, was my derivative. And what's interesting about it, because that's one of my basic tenets. I can go in here and do the best doggone show in the world on Monday, but if Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday I'm no good, then I'm not going to be around long.
Well, that's right. That's right.
And I think
you just have to give your all every day. And if you give your all and your heart's in the right place, good things will come of that. But you just have to cope with the bad things. Nobody knows what the bad things are that are coming. Some of us, you know, we can predict we're going to have budget problems in the next year or two. But you can't predict a pandemic. You can't predict a fire that closes down 175,000 square feet of your buildings. There are some things you just have to deal with. There's nothing in the policy manual about pandemics or what do you do if you close 175,000 square feet. You have to do what's right and make the decisions on a daily basis. And I think I think those decisions are the ones that actually will create your legacy more so than the ordinary ones that we do and take for granted, like we were talking about providing opportunity. We work on that too, but sometimes that's not very glamorous. And so I think it's a total of what we do in life, and I think that's what life's all about, is a summation of the whole thing. Ups and downs, make mistakes, do things right, but it's a combination of all of that that makes us what we are.
I almost think surviving is its own success.
Well, you know what? In certain times, that's the case. And keeping an institution afloat in times of distress is sometimes a difficult thing to do. And so, if you want to look at it basic, first thing you got to do is keep the institution alive and open. And if you can do that, then there's hope that you'll be able to provide opportunity and various things for the community, Southern Illinois community. And so that's very basic. And over the last 2 or 3 years, there's been some question in Illinois about the survival of community colleges, in some case universities. We're afraid we may even get back to that in another year or two, but we'll see how the budget thing works out.
And with this survival issue, is that, did John A. $2 million in bonds were approved for purchase or sell?
We're approving some bonds. We have some construction that needs to be updated. It's almost 50 years old. It's over 40 years old. It's part of our ability to attract students to campus and provide that opportunity that we're talking about. We need to consolidate our career and technical education. That is a coming thing. That's a big thing. We provide skill training in those areas as well as the traditional education as well. And so our career and technical education is spread out over campus, and the delivery of that is impeded by the way that it's organized. And so at some point, we're hoping to be able to consolidate that into either an existing building or perhaps a new one, but we'll do it the cheapest way that we can do it and the most effective way.
You know, and when I look back, and as I'm sure you can too, because oddly enough, Ron just mentioned one-room school. My father, by the way, also went to a one-room school. I can take you to exactly where the foundation still is, and I'd gone there and then went on to more substantial buildings, of course. But what's interesting, no matter what your age is, you can look back and say, that teacher did that, that teacher did that for me, that teacher. I was looking into a class yearbook that had been posted on my high school class on Facebook, and I can look at those teachers and go, that part of my personality came from that person. That part of my that came from that person. I literally see the pieces of my puzzle come from the faces of my teachers, and I wonder what makes a teacher stand out like that. I mean, I can name them right now today. I can start a name for people that had the impact on me and say thank you to them. It'd be a pretty long list. What makes a good teacher?
Well, a good teacher is a good person. They have to be honest, they have to be hardworking, they have to be fair, they have to treat people equally, they have to be a part of the community in some sense, and in the real sense they have to be a part of the community, they have to be respected, they have to be honest, they have to be just good people. A good teacher is a good person, normally. And so that's just the way that works. And every once in a while, that doesn't work that well. And if it's the wrong person doing the wrong job, that shows up pretty quickly. Incidentally, Tom, I got to throw this in. For my first 8 years of school, the only two teachers I had were my father and my father-in-law.
Well, they had closely monitored you there for success, hadn't they?
I had no choice. Right. I was destined from the beginning.
Yeah, you know where they've got you. Do you think there's some teachers that are more disciplinarians, more that maybe even have a tendency to give you a little more propensity towards giving you an F? I've always wondered, is the teacher who passes a lot of people the successful teacher, the one who fails more?
No, I think that teachers recognize at some point, I don't know whether this is the first grade or kindergarten or further up the line, probably further up the line, that teachers recognize that not everybody's going to be a genius in every discipline. And so if a person, if a student puts forth a genuine effort to try to accomplish whatever it is, I think a good teacher recognizes that and says, you know what, this guy's not going to be a psychiatrist, but he's got to take a psych course to get out of college. And so let's treat him fairly. There's no reason to flunk him. Let's treat him fairly. Now, we have grading scales and requirements and all of that, but there's always the latitude in the classroom. It's kind of called academic freedom. Take everybody's ability and into consideration when you're evaluating and when you're doing those kinds of things. That's part of treating people fairly, I think, that I mentioned earlier, is if I don't have very much skill in math, although math's a basic one, maybe I need a little skill in math, I think you just recognize that not everybody's going to do the same thing. Not everybody's going to be a research chemist. Some people are going to be tremendous plumbers, and there's nothing wrong with that. Plumber's probably going to make more than the chemist. And so it's that kind of consideration and fairness, I think, that makes a good teacher and a good learning atmosphere, too, by the way.
Yeah. And what I heard as a subtext is you can make any subject consumable for any person to ensure that that person reaches their goal as you have your stewardship for them, that they can continue on no matter what you think what they ought to do. You know, you help them. You can dumb it down to the point where anybody can move forward.
Well, you can, and that takes a little bit of a unique person to do that. And there has to be a commitment on the part of the teacher as well as the student that I'm going to provide the best training and education and teaching atmosphere that I possibly can.
Yeah.
And within that framework, if the student then works as hard as they can work to do what I want them to do, then that's about all you can expect them to do. If that's failure, that's failure, but that doesn't sound like failure when you got a hardworking teacher and a hardworking student. It sounds like learning is coming a little slower for that person.
Ron House, President, John A. Logan College. I can tell you, I don't know that you've detected it during this interview, but I've been a little maudlin about this, why I've been kind of going, because I know it's one of the last opportunities I'm going to have to talk to you while you're president, but I hope we have other opportunities to speak, because I've enjoyed meeting you. I've enjoyed talking to you, and there's not a time that you've been, whether in the studio or the phone, that I've not learned from you while listening to your responses to my questions. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate how gracious you were with your time, how frank you were with your answers. And I'm really going to miss talking to you on such a regular basis, Ron. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Tom. And it's part of my job, I think, to do that. But we are all teachers, in a way, and so if you've learned something, I'm happy about that. That's just a sideline that you picked up accidentally, but I've enjoyed this as well, and I think you and your show are commendable, and I think you're an asset to Southern Illinois, just like John A. Logan College is an asset to Southern Illinois, and so keep up the good work, and I do hope that we have other opportunities to talk and maybe even go to lunch someday if anything ever opens up.
Barbecue's on me.
No, it's on me, but that's okay.
Well, we'll fix it. We'll find something.
We'll work it out. We'll work it out.
We'll find something. And the fact that you appreciate and see the value of being here also is very, very good for me as well, too. Ron House, President, John A. Logan College. Ron, thanks again for everything.
Thank you, Tom. Have a good day.